Mr. Madison, what you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Okay, a simple wrong would have done just fine, but...
You remain one...
Okay, and... Are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
Hey, everybody, this is Kevin Farley, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast. Homemade biscuits, homemade broadcast.
Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio on RadioSaintPete.com. Will Coons here, checking back in. How are you? I'm good. Still got stickers, a bunch of them. I ordered a bunch of them. I've sent a few out. I have more to give. So email me, the Homemade Broadcast, all spelled out, at RadioSaintPete.com. Get yours. I'll pay the shipping and everything. This podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg, slybar.com, facebook.com/SlyBarSt. Pete, and Truvy Salon and Spa, 8908 4th Street North, Unit B. Call, make an appointment with Chrissy. They do hair and, you know, all those fancy things. 727-329-9751. She'll be able to hook you up. And I got an announcement. We got a cool show coming up, a cool comedy show at the Hollander Hotel on April Fool's Day. I want to announce it's John Jacobs, Zach Townsend, and Rio Paris is closing us out, the spectacular Rio Paris. That's Poolside Comedy Jam at the Hollander. I didn't pick the name. That was the Hollander that picked the name. But it should be a great show. It is at the Hollander Hotel. It's free. It's going to be Saturday, April 1st at 1 p.m. It starts. DJ Sugar Bear is going to be there spinning, but poolside. So that should be a good time. Comedy show will get started, around 7 p.m. So come out. It's free. Benefits the, Pet Pals Animal Shelter. I know that's a big charity. So a portion of the proceeds will go to that. The Hollander is located at 421 4th Avenue North here in St. Petersburg. More information, check out the Hollander Hotel downtown St. Petersburg Facebook page. Click on the events page, and should be on mine too at facebook.com/HMB Radio. Make sure you follow that page. Keep up with me on Twitter, home_made_man, and follow Radio St. Pete while you're there. Just Radio St. Pete, Radio STPETE. This week on the Homemade Broadcast, we have comedian Devin Alexander. He is a, he told me he's not smoking pot anymore. So we talked quite a bit about that, which is crazy because he was the pot guy. He was the pot comic of Tampa Bay, or one of them anyways. So he's comes in. We're talking about that this week. So let's get into it. Devin Pickett, Homemade Broadcast. Devin.
Hey, man.
I always get you three people mixed up. You, Travis Pickett, and Dylan Alexander.
We're all related.
Is that? No. No way.
No, we're not.
Yeah, that's not. You all completely look different. I think Travis is Hispanic. You're white. Dylan's black.
I think Travis is Native American.
Close enough.
Yeah, I mean, you're all red.
Yeah.
If you look at us, we look like those anamorphic books. Do you remember those?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I'm white, and then Dylan's kind of brown, and then Travis is like super brown. Right?
Yes. Related. And now that I look at Travis, yeah, I think he is Native American. I think you're right. Like full blooded too, like real deal.
Yeah.
He is. I saw him at Side Splitters. I was doing an event there for The Bone. They had some sort of comedy night there.
Okay.
And I was like, he was just there working. I was like, oh, what's up? He does this thing when I first saw him that I really liked. but nobody else seemed to really like. But it was also at the Yard of Ale Mike that we used to run, which I don't know if you had been.
I never got to. I think I was in New York a lot of the times when you had just started it.
It was a rough one.
Was it
even
really?
Compared to by open mic standards, it was still a rough one.
Just rough crowd or like no turnout or?
Well, I feel like a lot of people wanted to watch TV or pick up chicks. They weren't there to see comedy, which was a shame because they had a really good stage.
Oh, that sucks.
When you have a good
venue, yeah. Nobody's interested.
We had a few good nights, but the majority was people like not looking at the stage and looking at the TVs at the bar and drinking and stuff like that. It's a bummer. They were supposed to bring us back after football season because they canceled us because Thursday night football.
Which is understandable.
Totally
understandable. If you got TVs in front of drunk people's faces, they want to see men running to each other.
Totally. I wrote an article for SubApp for it called Comedy's Off Season, which was when football season comes along, there's really no comedy open mics.
Which is great for comics because it gives you a new route to go on. You know, mm-hmm. You can find another space or you can take that time to write new material.
Yeah, because you're pretty much limited to Tuesday and Wednesday. That was about it because there's football Thursday.
Yeah.
Friday, there's college games start. Saturday, college games. Sunday, football. Monday night football.
It's rough. It's rough for a comedian out there.
But it also, I guess, like the Tuesday, Wednesday mics probably did pretty well during that time.
There were a few. I remember Double Decker on Tuesday in Ybor. That was ran by Jeff Ray, and that was always that was always fun. It was unpredictable. You never knew if he was going to show up. You never knew if he was going
to show up to his own mic.
Yeah, if he was going to show up intoxicated or obliterated.
Which I'm sure he did most of the time.
He's crazy.
He's
great now, though. Yeah. He's doing great now. I was talking to him Wednesday night when I saw you at the Tampa Improv. He said he's clean and trying to live a lot more clean. So very little marijuana in there, too.
I want to tell you about the Travis thing real quick. So before I forget. So he brought, I remember one day he brought in this baby, what do you call it? Carriage? Not a carriage, but a thing you grab with a handle that has a baby in it usually. I don't know what you call those.
Baby carrier.
Baby carrier. Yeah, that's fine with me. I can go with that. And I was like, is there a baby in there? And he's like, yeah, I couldn't get my girlfriend to watch him, so I had to bring him in here. I'm like, that's so weird. But yeah, I appreciate your, gumption to come out here even with a little baby and stuff.
Wait, so there was really, he really brought his kid out?
I'll tell you. So he's got the baby, and I see him in the corner sometimes, like, when nobody's looking, like, shh, like, and I was like, this baby's really good. I haven't heard it make a peep yet or anything. So, and then I call his name. He comes up on stage, and he goes, I had to bring my kid. And he kind of holds it up high over his head, and he goes, whoa! And the thing falls over. And nobody reacted to it at all, which was shocking, but I'm like, with my jaw on the ground, and then there's no baby inside of it, of course.
Wait, did people at least laugh?
No, he didn't really get anything out of it.
I wonder, see, and that's weird because you don't even know if they're pissed off. Like, I'd rather at least an audience member say, hey, no,
so I can at least have something
to work off of. If not, then that's up to you and your creative ability and what you can run off of that, but I would never throw a baby.
I think what it was, like, he didn't do it, he acted like he did it by mistake, but I think why I enjoyed it was because I talked to him about it. So I had some backstory there about why this, everyone else might have not even noticed it for all that. So they were just like, that's weird.
Probably.
But it didn't work because he didn't have the backstory behind it. But I loved it, and I don't know if he does it anymore or not, but I thought it was hilarious. But anyways,
Yeah, I saw him. We performed on the Florida's Funniest together this past October, last October. That was interesting, fun. Shout out to Preacher Lawson. Mm. He deserved it. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, black
out of,
guy.
Out of Orlando.
And
he's killer.
Did he win the whole thing?
He won the whole thing.
Wow.
He's in L.A. now. And I mean, I was watching one of his videos from Laughs on Fox. And it was just killer. I mean, you can just tell when somebody's there and they have it, you can just tell that there's no faking how genuine like that act is.
Right. That's always, I think, the best policy. Honesty, that is the best policy in a lot of circumstances. But what do you think, especially with comedy? You have to kind of. Oh, I should announce that you are a comedian, of course, joining me. Devin Alexander.
Hey, guys.
Occasional comedian, now a working man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm I mean, I think honesty. Yeah, you got to be honest. You got to be yourself. You can't. I know there's guys out there that build their act on an act itself without, like, using personal experiences. I personally, I can't do that. I've had, like, I've been thinking about it a lot lately. I grew up so, I don't know if everybody's had a dark past, but I grew up so fucked up. And I feel like, for me, if there's anybody else out there who's grown up like that, sorry, I cussed.
That's okay. Don't worry about it.
If anybody's out there who's grown up like that, I'd rather be able to make humor of my situation so maybe that they can't look back and have a horrible, you know, think that their life is so horrible. Maybe that they can make it better by a joke or, like, I have a joke. It doesn't always go well with certain crowds. Like, I just did a show a couple months ago, and my brother was a big drug addict, and one of his drugs of choice was cocaine. So I said my brother did so much coke, now when he drinks Coca-Cola, he's got to use his nose. And it was an old crowd, and they were like, we don't do cocaine.
We don't know what that is. Yeah, they probably thought he was just sniffing, like, regular soda.
Probably.
Actually, that's not true, because I remember my grandmother telling me they sold cocaine in the Sears catalog. So they probably know even more.
I mean, they sold it in the Coca-Cola.
Right.
When it was first started. So.
Correct, yeah.
But yeah, I believe honesty, man. You got to be genuine.
I know there's some comics that do that, but it must be hard to write about things that you don't know. Because I feel like most jokes are premises that come about from your own experience that are highly exaggerated most of the time. But are there those ones that are just making stuff up completely? And that's, I'm almost more impressed by that, if that's the case.
If you're highly intelligent and you know how to play with words, like puns, puns are like, kind of like jokes, but they take a lot to think about. A lot of guys will sit there and think about how to use those words to make it funny.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother level of creativity in my book. It's more than a personal experience that you can make fun of a situation or go off like physical humor.
Yeah, that's almost a challenge in its own right, is the correct verbiage that you use and the language that you use is super important, because if you misuse a word, it can screw up the whole joke. That whole 30 seconds, just because you misplace one word.
A rhythm and cadence too. A lot of people don't pay attention to the tone and the inflection in the words that you're using. That's a big thing on stage, because tone is going to set, you know, it sets the pace of that joke, the setting of that joke almost. Like, where are you going to take it?
Mm-hmm.
Where is it going to be sarcastic? Is it going to be serious, and then it's going to punch you because you don't know where it came from, left field or right? I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. You told me when I saw you, well, actually, I talked to you today, but you said, yeah, I'm clean living now. So, and you were known as the guy, the pothead dude.
Pothead, I wrote comedian. A lot of pot jokes.
Yeah. So, does that mean no more pot in your life?
No, I came to the realization, I'm glad you asked that, because it's something I've been heavily thinking about. I came to the realization I was just abusing it. You know, I've been smoking pot for the past 7 years every day. And I convinced myself, I remember when I started smoking pot, I convinced myself that that was the solution to all my problems because of my past, because of what I saw growing up as a kid, because I felt I needed to not feel what I felt as a kid anymore. So I would smoke pot. And, you know, once you start, it's with your friends. It's fun. It's a circle. You pass a joint around, and it feels almost, I don't know, it feels almost ritual that you're doing that. For me, it got to the point where I was manipulating my thoughts to get high in any kind of situation that I could, whether or not it was an uncomfortable situation, whether or not it was something where I was supposed to be working at a job. I would go out to my car, you know, a little bit.
It makes life a little bit easier. I think that's true, and I tell a lot of potheads. I mean, I don't think I was ever a pothead, but I did smoke pot when I was a little younger,
mm-hmm.
Like at night,
mm-hmm.
for instance, or weekends, that type of thing.
Right.
But it, like, you have to feel life pressing down on you sometimes, and it's not good. I know people wake up and smoke, well, no judgment.
None.
But I think
I was that guy.
Yeah. I think you're missing out. I feel bad because I feel like you're missing out on life to a certain extent. It might be easier,
mm-hmm.
but those challenges that you face every day, those are the things that help your personal development. And I feel like a lot of people miss those opportunities because they're just in this haze and they're fine. You know?
I can tell you that I can't remember a lot of my high school experiences because it was right after high school that I started heavily, like, smoking and using cannabis because I believed it was a medicine. And, you know, it is for people who really need it. For somebody who's got psychological stuff that they haven't dealt with yet, I don't think that that's the thing that they should use as a problem solver. It's a great tool for creativity. I'm not going to lie. I wrote some really funny jokes on it. I used to tell a joke where when I was in New York, I couldn't find any weed, right? So I was living in my girlfriend's apartment at the time, had to improvise. The only thing I could find was dill weed. So I decided to smoke that, right? Shortly after, I became a pickle. It was the dumbest joke I'd ever told. I think I won my way through a UCF comedy competition and got to the last round, got to perform with Tanisha Long and Esther Koo from
Girl Code.
That was a fun experience, but
it's because everybody was high. They thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, they were all college kids, so they were like, as long as you're not talking about politics.
Yeah, exactly. Which, that's a good point, is that those pop comedians, they have a niche audience because I think a lot of those people don't care about the world, I guess, or politics and what's going on in the day-to-day. They just want to be entertained and have a good time.
Right.
So it draws a lot of people in.
I think so, too. I mean, if you look at guys like Doug Benson, most of his act is him reading his tweets, and he makes fun of his tweets, which is cool. That, I'm not hating. I love Doug Benson. Super High Me was one of my favorite documentaries, but I don't want to be that guy anymore. I got to a point where I was like, what do I remember about grade school? How can I make those experiences funny? Look, for instance, kindergarten, I remember taking a nap and waking up to a kid who rushed to the bathroom and burst open with his pants down to his ankles, pointing at his little wiener like, why is this moving? Like, this is no joke. These are true experiences. And, like, there's no way you can make that up.
Yeah.
There's
truth is always better.
Exactly. I think so. You got to be honest and genuine. You got to be yourself. That's mm-hmm. where you'll shine most, I think.
So what was the thing that really, or the moment where you're like, I got to stop smoking so much weed?
This is not a joke itself, but I was given some edibles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with medical cannabis edibles. They're they can be very potent and talked about like they're almost psychedelic experiences, which is which is what I had, dude. I was at work and I was finishing work, so I was pretty much done with like my duties, you know, cleaning up the women's bathroom and sweeping and fun janitor stuff. So I was like, to make this a little more interesting on my drive home, I'm going to eat some of this brownie my friend gave me. Now, this isn't your typical, like, medical brownie. Like,
this is a homemade one.
Homemade. Uh-huh. No.
There's no milligram dosage.
Nothing.
Sure, yes.
Nothing. I don't know what it is.
Sure.
I just know it's probably going to taste good because I smoked earlier.
Uh-huh.
So eat corners of it, and I was like, all right, I'm going to drive home. I don't think I'm going to really feel anything off a corner, but whatever. I'm going to drive home.
Oh, you didn't even eat the whole thing?
No, let me get to it.
Boy.
So I didn't feel anything. I got a call from my buddy. He's like, hey, man, you want to meet up, hang out? He's a nerd. He plays Pokemon Go. So I was like, yeah, let's go meet up at your Pokey Hangs. And while we were there, I ate half of it. Because I felt like I was going to be with a buddy of mine, so I was like, if I freak out, I can release my inner thoughts on him, and he'll be able to coach me through whatever it is that I need to get through. Eat half of it, and I start feeling, you know, normal. I was a smoker, so my tolerance was already high.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like I was freaking out or anything. Friend disappears somewhere. I'm alone. For about an hour. So I was like, all right, screw this guy. Why am I sitting here by myself? I'm going to eat the rest of this brownie. Let's see how many friends I can make. Worst idea ever, dude. If you're ever going to eat edibles, please don't eat the whole thing in one sitting. Let it hit you. Let it take its course, because it's not like smoking. It's not like you smoke a joint and then in a couple hours it's done.
Right.
You eat this, in a couple hours it's just starting.
Yes, right, right.
By midnight, my buddy went home. I was by myself. Get home. It was psychedelic, dude. Have you taken mushrooms before?
Yeah, well, long time ago.
Yeah, it was roughly like 3 or 4 years ago for me. But I remember when I was on them, I couldn't make a decision. Like, I couldn't make up my mind. I couldn't be still. I couldn't just be okay in the moment. I was very manic-y, if you will.
Right, right.
And that's how I felt while eating this edible. It was 3 in the morning. I couldn't sleep. I knew I had to be at work in the morning. I was like, all right, maybe I should just go drive. No, it's 3 in the morning, dude. You can't just go drive around right now. You're high. Yeah, you're tripping.
Suspicious. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, just take a shower. No, it's 3 in the morning, dude. You need to, like, try and sleep. And I can hear my, like, inner coach just freaking out. I'm almost.
Oh, even he's panicking.
Yeah. Right? And, like, my heart rate's fudging going through the roof. It's crazy. I shut off the lights in my room and just laid in the dark. And I remember thinking to myself, this is not okay. I remember thinking to myself, I don't like using the term normal, but normal potheads don't freak out.
Yeah.
If you're getting paranoid from something, it's not good.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be doing this to yourself. It can't be good. And I didn't sleep well that night. Tossed and turned for about 3 hours, got up at 7, still high, went to the gym, was like, I didn't work out that hard, but I got a good sweat in riding the bike, and I could feel it. You know, you could feel your body. It's different. It's not like smoking. You can feel almost your nerve endings, like, twitching and shocking. It's weird, dude. Mm-hmm. And I went to work, and it finally wore off when I was at work, and I went to my car to try and smoke.
I think it was a bad idea.
Yeah,
I take it.
And, touched the lighter to the weed and
getting hit with a sledgehammer.
And yeah, and it was the same thing happened. Heart rate went up.
And you were at work.
At work. At work. And I had to keep composure.
Yeah.
And I'm a janitor, or maintenance technician. So I do more than just janitorial work. Okay. I change AC vents and
Renaissance man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have to see a lot of people, and I was finding ways to not be around anybody after I did that. And I just convinced myself, I can't keep doing this to myself. If it's making me paranoid, I'm not even myself at that moment. So there's no reason to be doing this to myself if it's not. I just didn't feel like it was helping me.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say I'm never going to smoke pot again, because I hope to think that at some point maybe it could be fun again.
Sure.
When maybe I take care of myself, when I get things that I want to get done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm back in the gym again.
How long has it been?
Since I was out of the gym.
No, I mean, since you kind of gave it up.
7 days.
Okay.
But, I mean, it wasn't cold turkey at first, so I would kind of take, like, a hit here and there, and then I'd feel that paranoia, and I'd be like, all right, I can't do this. Mm-hmm, so just bit by bit stopping, but now it's been, like, 7 days. So, yeah, I mean, it feels.
Yeah, what difference do you notice between
my
now
awareness
and a week
is
ago?
Better.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness is heightened more than I thought I was when I was high smoking pot. I feel funny again. When I was getting high all the time, I had this inner thought that would tell myself, you're not funny. You're not funny. Like, why do you think you're funny? It was weird, dude. It was almost like something was hovering over me, like a negative vibe. And I don't know if it's me. I don't know if it's me naturally.
It's you.
Yeah, of course it is. It's not the pot. It's got to be me. It was just making me heightened and aware of how I am. And I think I got to deal with whatever it is that is before I can indulge, if you will.
I think it can be used as a tool. I don't use it anymore. And maybe in the future I come back to it. I don't know. But I feel like I have too much to do right now. And for me, it does make me lazy and too content with the world.
You don't get the paranoia?
Oh, I didn't. And then I'll tell you my edible story. So
let's hear
I have
it.
A very similar story to yours. What happened was I had stopped smoking pot. This happened probably 3 years ago, I would say. I stopped smoking pot probably for 6 months at this point and was
doing fine. And then my friend had one of the, you know, the Listerine strips?
Yeah.
Had one of those, and they said, oh, my friend brought these back from Colorado.
Oh,
and man. I was like, I want to try one of those. She's like, all right. And she goes, now, don't take the whole thing.
So what, you rip it in half? I never ripped the breath strip in half.
Well, that's what I said. I was like, this is my first rodeo. I'll be okay. Trust me. So she goes, just cut it, you know, a quarter. Okay. So I said, all right. So I did that and sitting there for a little while. And I think I'm going to take the other quarter. So now I'm at half at this point. So I'm sitting around, feeling it a little bit.
Starting to get a little buzzy.
Still getting a little buzzy. Yeah, having a good time. And I'm like, you know what? Hey, I'm just going to take that other half.
It's always the inner voice, man. Don't listen to that guy.
He's a bad influence, yeah. So I did. I took the other half. And I thought this was over a period of an hour at least. This was probably maybe 20 minutes that all this happened.
No.
So I was having a great time. I was watching Game of Thrones. I was stretching. It was, you know.
So wait, you said Game of Thrones. So this is fairly recent, a couple years ago?
First season
okay.
of Game of Thrones.
Okay.
This is, like, just came out. So I was like... having a good time, and then I went into the bathroom to pee and looked in the mirror when I was washing my hands. And all that fell down the rabbit hole of all the terrible things. I pushed that kid in sixth grade who was, you know, I should have done that. And just all the terrible things I did as a person. I was like, oh, my God, I just got to go to bed. So I laid down, and I did fall asleep, and I opened my eyes the next morning, and it's Monday morning. I got to go to work, and I'm still feeling it. And extremely high.
Shit.
So I go into work, and it's like a little family at work, and my boss comes up and goes, hey, man, how was your weekend? Slaps me on the shoulder.
Probably scares the crap out of you.
God! And he's like, whoa, sorry. I'm like, sorry. And then I was like, yeah, just a little fuzzy today, you know, whatever. And that lasted 3 days.
What?
I didn't feel the same again until Wednesday. And I was like, I'm completely done with this. I can't do this anymore.
I think so. I don't think what I felt was 3 days, but I think it was a couple. Because I didn't feel the same. Even after like a couple of days, I was still like, you know, just hitting my pipe a little bit. And you feel a little buzz. But like, it was intense. It was really, like, that's for somebody who's probably on their deathbed. Like, I'm not dying yet. I literally was laying in my bed and told whoever it was that's running this show, if I gotta go right now. Take me.
Yeah.
Take me, Lord. I'm ready. Whoever it is. Yeah. And I really had to convince myself, like, maybe it was an ego death. I don't know. Cause I've already had one. I'm not an egotistical kind of guy, although I love the gym. So it's kind of ironic. But,
that's for your health.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
definitely.
Yeah.
No, not really. Cause when the trainer asked me, I just told him I wanted to look good in front of my chick when I'm naked.
All right.
He didn't think that was funny. I was like,
I'm sure that's a lot of people's, you know, motivation.
Yeah, screw the hell. I'm going to Pizza Hut after this.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it is intense. And that's when I gave it up. So we have a pretty similar story there. But honestly, for me, it's the best thing that I ever did because I started to get work done. I started up this podcast, started taking it seriously. And it's building
grown.
All the time. It's building. So
I know it's grown. It's grown. I mean, what? We did one. It was like 2 years ago almost, and you've had...
Did you come and do mine?
I thought I was... Yeah, I think I was on one because
I think you did Bailey's. I don't know if you ever done mine.
I thought I was on one once because I cussed. I remember not the cussing thing, not being able to cuss, and I'm super vulgar, so it's so hard for me.
Maybe it could be.
To stop these thoughts.
I thought maybe this was your first time, but maybe you were here early on, yeah.
I think so because I think I did this and then started coming to James's. I don't know.
Okay.
Either way, I just remember being around this environment. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool to see it grow.
It is very cool to see it grow, especially because you don't know what to expect when you do something like this. You're putting yourself out there. If you're doing anything creative, you're opening yourself up to criticism. And it's a tough thing, getting over your own BS.
Do you have those inner thoughts that, like, they're like the resistance thoughts that kind of try to hold you back?
No, absolutely. And, like, I think it's important being honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm a novice at this. I wouldn't say I'm good at this.
Yeah, I'm...
It's 10,000 hours to get good at something, is my understanding. I don't know if you know what Malcolm Gladwell is.
Yeah.
So I'm about 9,900. 800 something hours away.
There, man. You're almost professional.
There. Yeah, I'm getting there. I mean, I'm working at it every day and, or, you know, at least once a week. But it's going to take a long time. So being honest with yourself too really helps, knowing that, you know, yeah, I stink, but I'm getting better and I'm trying to get better. And, you know, letting people know that, is important, because I feel like a lot of people walk around thinking that they're really great. Mm-hmm. Like, especially with comedians, I've noticed.
It's an arrogance.
Holy moly. They're the biggest beta alphas I've ever met in my life. Like, they have this really big, not everybody, but
not everybody,
but I've seen it where it's like, and I noticed too, the ones who say they stink are usually the better ones. And the ones who are, think they're really great, usually kind of stink, in my opinion.
Bill Burr still says his stuff sucks sometimes. Yeah, I hear guys talking about him coming off stage, and he complains about it.
Sure.
And I'm sure he killed. Like, he just has the room dying.
Well, and maybe not. And I mean, you know, if you're working on new stuff, you don't know.
I'm sure
Bill Burr has bad sets every now and again.
I mean, if you saw his last special, that was rough.
I didn't like it.
I mean, he was touching material that Houston didn't want to, you know, they were kind of...
was it Houston? I thought it was like Nashville
somewhere in Texas.
Or something.
It might have been Nashville.
I think
somewhere
it was
in
Tennessee
Texas.
Somewhere.
Was it in Tennessee?
I think so.
I thought it was Texas.
Well, and maybe I got to rewatch it, because I love Bill Burr.
He's
great. I love
the
Monday Morning Podcast.
I listen to it too.
Listen every week. He's just a fun guy. Mm-hmm. I like his personality and everything. But being real with yourself is hard for a lot of people, especially if they're in this position where, I mean, why do something if you don't think you can be the best at it? I understand that, too.
You got to have passion. You have to.
Absolutely. And you should want to be the best. But it's a hard thing to really be critical of yourself. Not worry about what other people say, because other people's motivations sometimes aren't. They're just to be rude, especially on the Internet. But being real with yourself, not mean to yourself, but honest.
I think one of the problems is, like, maybe some of the guys are trying to be the best of the best and not trying to be the best of themselves. And that's what I try to focus on when I get on stage, you know. And there's always a moment of humbling experience, you know, that'll wake a comedian up. Like, the last show I did in front of a room full of people that were probably no younger than 50, other than my buddy that I brought with me, mm-hmm. who thought it was a blast to watch me bomb in front of 100 old people. But the first joke I did was, you know, an off-the-rip joke that I had never written. I just made a simple observation that there was a room full of old people in a theater, and both of my grandparents were preachers. So I said very sarcastically after they cheered me on that, thank you for making me feel like I'm at a church, because both of my grandparents were preachers. And just the silence alone was like, oh, you were supposed to laugh at being old. I guess that wasn't funny for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that's tough. And then when you take a leap like that and it doesn't go the way you know, expect, and then you're like, well, I don't know how much your time was, but pretty much.
Minutes.
Yeah, so you did 10% of your set at that point, so you got 9 more minutes to win them back, and that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, it's humbling, because it'll just show you, okay, that, for me, I felt like that wasn't good enough, so I get to go back to my book and or whatever, my thoughts, and start reworking something,
yeah,
rewiring something to make it that much whatever I could fix.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you doing stand-up down here? Because you moved to New York.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I know you're doing stand-up up there. I saw you keep up on
Facebook
and stuff.
Going back up March 20th through the 26th. They're putting on a birthday show for me on the 22nd.
Oh, cool.
It's going to be fun at Broadway Comedy Club.
Nice.
So I'm still doing some stuff here. It's hard with working, you know.
Yeah.
I work crazy hours now. And their nights from like 2 to 11.
Oh, you're doing night shift.
So
yeah, that's a killer.
It ruins me. I mean, all I can do is write, and then I practice my material on the people I see at work, and then hopefully when I go back to New York, I'm ready for whatever they bring me. But yeah, I did a show with Stephen Lawley. I don't know if you know him. He's from LA.
Name sounds familiar.
But he's from Tampa. He's in LA. I think he wrote for Cat Williams and did stuff for him. But I met him a while back at a open mic, and he had me open for him at the Carrollwood Culture Center. Have you ever been there?
I have not.
It's an interesting theater. I wouldn't say it's for comedy unless you can bring your comedy crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm like you. I'm novice. I'm 4 years in barely, so I don't have a crowd.
Yeah.
Unless right. I, like, beg my friends, like, please, I'll buy you a beer, dude.
Yeah.
Just laugh. Just come.
Just come. Yeah,
yeah, just come. Just yeah, come just, and... You can have your back to me, dude.
Sure. Just have, yeah, seat, butts in the seats. Yeah.
Wednesday's doing good, though, at the Tampa Improv.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you.
Yeah, I went out kind of on a whim there. Zach was, Townsend was, we were doing something, and then I was like, hey, I'll go with you to the Improv. I haven't been at Improv in a year, probably.
Wow.
So it was good, good to see everybody and hang out in there. It's always packed now, and I know they moved their Improv to twice a month, and I think it's beneficial.
Really, I think it helps, yeah, because it's not as... you know, they're not expected to be there, so it's like, ah, maybe I could just go next Wednesday. No, you don't have that opportunity.
Yeah, right.
You only have these certain days.
Go 2 weeks, but yeah. But,
exactly.
So you're working nights now, or like all the time?
All the time, man. It's so bad.
You got to find another gig, dude.
I really do, and that's why hopefully my girlfriend's lease is up in July in New York City, and we're discussing ideas for California, because I can't stop thinking about LA when I was out there. You know, I got to do a guest spot for Ian Edwards, and that was like 2 years ago, and I'm still like, that was like the greatest comedy experience I could have, so why not pursue that same feeling when I was out there? So we're talking about kind of...
I wonder what the difference between the New York and LA comedy scene is.
Weather, oh.
The weather.
Like, the weather yeah. makes you appreciate it more. I don't know. I think there's a lot more... lighter sense of comedy in LA. There's, I think they appreciate the darker side of comedy.
Really? In LA?
Yeah. No, in New York.
York.
In New York,
okay, yeah. That makes sense.
There's a lot of very self-deprecation going mm-hmm. on, you know, comedians hating themselves or...
Not as much of that in Los Angeles?
Not that I saw. I saw a lot more social kind of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
The lady who put me on the show with Ian Edwards, she had like this weird burlesque act going on, and that was shaking. If shaking your boobs works for you, or use it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, use your assets for sure. Whatever works.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so you're still with your girl, but she lives in New York.
Yeah.
You're living back down here working.
Yeah.
And then July, talk about moving to LA.
Yep, because July 4th will be a year that I moved back from New York City.
I thought you just moved back.
I've been laying low, man. No, jeez. I've been laying low. I've been working, you know. I got myself a 2014, like I was telling you.
Yes.
I got a car.
Yes, I wanted to talk about this with you. Why would you buy a new car?
Because
if you're making $11 an hour.
Because I still live on my parents' couch, kind of. If I need to go to LA.
Why don't you buy yourself a bed? Before a couch.
I got a bed at their house. Why don't I buy myself a roof?
A roof would be good. Yes, your own small building, maybe a one-bedroom or studio apartment would
but
be
I was,
good.
I was driving a PT Cruiser, and
it was pretty
annoying. I mean, it was a grandma car.
All you need is a beater, though, dude. You just need a cash car.
I had a beater, and it wasn't going well. It started shaking when I would get to a certain speed. I'm done. So I got this car.
Who gave you a loan for that car?
Man, I got a credit score, bro. I went to college. No, I went to art school, but it gave me a credit score.
Yeah, right.
Credit
you don't
score.
Have student loans or anything?
Nah, man. I mean, probably. I think I got a little bit left, but I'm not. I didn't finish.
Probably.
So I
don't, you don't know?
Nah, I do. They call me every day.
All right. Hey, talk to them, because if you don't talk to them.
Nah, I defer it when I can and can't. But I don't have much left. I didn't finish the program, so it's not the full $100,000. Don't worry. Yeah, that's why I opted out. If I'm going to be a filmmaker, you know, all I got to do is buy a MacBook
what
and
school?
Learn. The Art Institute?
Yes.
Tampa, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so if I want to be a filmmaker, all you need is a MacBook and learn Final Cut Pro or whatever software you want to learn. And you can shoot whatever you want.
I'm not going to have you announce how much money you owe in student loans. But let's say over in the six figure or five figure?
No.
Five figure?
No,
not even.
No, I'm good. Yeah.
Okay.
Like
right,
I'm good.
Good.
I'm not in a rough situation. My debt is actually not bad, obviously, if they let me get a
that's
car.
That's what I was gonna say,
so,
because I got a big hunk sitting out there and
it's rough.
I can't get even I wanted $5,000 credit limit on my credit card. They won't even give that to me.
Wow.
So
it's rough.
I don't know how I'm gonna buy a house or
any of this stuff. Like, I'm 32. I want to start thinking about, you know, building a home, a real home.
See, I'm 25 and I'm already having those thoughts. That's why I'm getting
sober. Well, that's
good.
Yeah, that's good. No, that's a good thing. Because I'm behind the ball, behind the curve. Is that what it's called?
You think you're a little late on your generation?
I think I've been a late bloomer. I mean, most of my friends that are my age have a house, have kids, are getting married. Some are even getting divorced at this point.
Yeah, but you're a bachelor, man, running a radio show.
Yes.
You don't have expenses, do you? I mean, do you want them?
I mean, I have like a house and...
More space.
Not even more space, but something that's mine that I own. Even an apartment that I own that I was building equity in, I would be okay with. But paying somebody else and getting nothing to really show for it is kind of sucks. You know what I mean? So I'd like to have... You know, and maybe a nicer car, but I can't afford that right now. So
then I got the one of the two. And I have it in hopes that, like, I got it as a step toward California. Because if I was going to drive, if I was going to move there, I was going to drive myself and my stuff. Mm-hmm. That PT Cruiser was not going to make it, dude. It would shake probably to Georgia and then have a seizure and, you know, die. But... I had to get into something new, and then if I go out there, I'm not afraid to sleep in something new, so I slept in the PT Cruiser, and that was kind of, like, iffy. The locks weren't automatic. You know, I feel safer in an automatic lock.
I see the logic that you're trying to spin here. You're trying to rationalize it.
It's true, though.
To not only yourself at this point, but to me.
I see it as a reward, though, for like, really. I see
a $400 a month car payment?
Yeah, because one day it'll be mine. Oh, I'll pay it off.
And it was brand new, too. It wasn't even like a certified pre-owned type thing.
Nope.
So as soon as you drove that thing off the lot, it lost about a third of its value just by driving it off the lot.
I haven't put subs in it yet, though, so I messed with the radio.
So you'll gain that back on the sound system?
I hope so.
Yeah.
It's a good car, man. It gets great gas mileage, 33 to the gallon.
That's good.
I'm happy.
Save yourself a few pennies on the gas. Yeah, they'll be good, man.
They'll be
happy. That's a good investment.
Yeah,
good for you.
I mean, it's building my credit, too, as I'm paying it off. So, I mean, I'm happy. I feel like I'm doing the adult American thing right now.
You're definitely doing the American thing, for sure.
And if I have
a young adult American thing to do, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. See, but I feel like I'm behind in my generation. I feel like every 25-year-old that I know is already with kids. Is already with their own car, is already with their own home.
It's tough, too, because, like, even, like, I'm trying to date and stuff, you know what I mean? And it's like, is there anybody who's not a single mom out there? I mean, I just don't really want to date a chick with kids.
It's an extra responsibility.
It's a lot to come into. I respect, like, my stepfather for coming in and doing that, you know,
with me.
That's a big deal. And he was probably about my age when he came into the picture. So it's like... I just don't want to do it. I want to start from scratch. Now, the good thing about being a dude is that I can have kids when I'm 40. And, you know.
You think so? You have hopes that it'll still work?
Oh, dude. You can have kids until you're in your 70s. I wouldn't do that in my 70s. But,
No.
If you're a lady, if you're about my age, the bell curve starts to swing down after about 30 and it gets tougher. But I'll just marry a 22-year-old and I'll be good to go when I'm 45.
You better have $1 million in that bank ready to give her.
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah, yeah. I'm working hard now so I can, you know, have that lifestyle. Although radio is not a profession that pays historically well, it does pay for those very few that make it.
Does it?
Yeah.
I mean, once you start getting yourself some sponsors and, you know,
sure.
People
well, that's
actually
what
like you and want to hear you speak.
I want to do the radio thing. But I'm also a big fan of building this HMB radio network. And
I think it's great
going.
That you are, and I think you should keep it going for as long as you can because it's your voice. It's something you're building.
It's my passion project for sure.
That's
and hopefully it will lead to – if I could do this a few times a week and make enough money. Like I don't even need to be rich, but make enough money to live and live comfortably to the point where I can buy a Nissan Sentra.
Your material gets better. You have more time to research your ideas. I mean, your guests, who you could bring on whoever you want to at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be awesome. That would be such a fun job, too.
Imagine all the experiences and stories and things you'd learn. I mean, you learn so much from talking to people.
Yeah.
I feel like people my generation doesn't really sit down and do this. I see too much of the phone. I mean, I notice myself now that I'm not smoking so much cannabis that I look at my phone a lot and I have to catch myself, hey, man, you don't need to do this right now.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend Kevin about this the other day. There is two real worlds now, and one of them's on the internet. Your Facebook profile is a real thing. It's you represented in the cyber world. And I think eventually the two are going to come together in some
That's the idea. Way. That's the singularity, man.
You're going to have it, so you won't have to look at your phone, but it'll be in your brain. Like, you'll be able to see your Facebook in your brain and interact with people. I don't really either.
No, I don't want to be that generation. I don't think I'll be that generation. I'll watch another generation do it if they want to.
I think that's the progression, though, that's coming, is they're going to build these worlds where the real world and the cyber world is going to become this one weird.
I mean, we're with technology... The new technology emerging. You got cameras that can see more planets that we never even knew about. When I was a kid, we learned Pluto was a new planet, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's exponentially happening. Like, every day there's some crazy new advancement that's, you know, blowing my mind.
I've heard Joe Rogan talk about it. It's like a race. It's like a race to make the next best thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It's happening every day, daily. I feel like that about my jokes, man. Like, I feel like when I sit down, I gotta be the most creative engineer to my jokes or to my ideas, my concepts that I can get down. I try to limit myself at least 5 concepts or ideas a day.
That's good. You're writing them down in your notebook. I see you're carrying around your notebook.
That's just one of them. That's the little notebook. That's like the little pinpoints. I have a big book where I'll go and just find myself for hours when I get days off. And I'll just write stories now that I'm remembering experiences, and it may not even be a joke, you know. I've had to write about seeing my mom like get beat, and in my book I make it humorous, but to somebody else I don't know if it's funny, because I remember watching The Wizard of Oz and seeing this happen, and now every time I'm watching The Wizard of Oz, like, I get these PTSD flashbacks, and it's crazy that I can't even watch The Wizard of Oz without seeing my mom get beat.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. So
wow.
I think writing is the biggest, man. You got to write, especially if you want to create.
That is a good tool. I mean, like, you know, pot is fine, but when you can get it out in a way that could potentially, if you could turn the bad things into good things, and if the good thing is humor, and that's something that you're passionate about, I think that's really the way of handling these, you know, traumas.
Definitely. I think a lot of it has helped. I mean, I talk about my dad and brother doing cocaine. I reference walking into the kitchen and seeing my brother and dad doing cocaine, like the scene in Lady and the Tramp when they're about to eat the spaghetti.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing dad on one side, brother on the other, doing lines, right?
Wow.
Meeting in the middle, kissing each other. It's romantic. But in the end, I mean, I smoked pot with my dad when I was 13.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Not good.
I mean, I felt good, but
yeah,
about it, it's like, come on, dad. Like, when you were around, you didn't even do it right.
Yeah.
You taught me how to run away from a fight. You didn't teach me how to stay there because you ran.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, dang, I feel like we're getting into it now, but we got to go.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time. You'll come back soon. Devin Alexander, thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, Will. Always a pleasure.
All right, there you go. Devin Pickett. Follow him on Twitter. Devin A. Pickett. Devin with an I. Devin. Thank you for listening to the Homemade Broadcast this week. Have a great week, and I will talk to you in the future, probably next week. Stickers, email me. I'll send them to you for free. TheHomemadeBroadcast@RadioSt.Pete.com. All right. Stay tuned if you're listening on Radio St. Pete for Frank Rivera's Jazz Show, Indie Circuit coming up after that. If you're listening on podcast, thanks. Will Koontz, HMB Radio, Radio St. Pete. See you next week.